Yeah, this is Penn Jillette here on the Penn Jillette Show. Coincidentally, on Free FM, sitting across from Michael Goudeau, the secret Tour de France rider. Did you ride yesterday?
I did.
He's riding
late into the night.
He's riding the Tour de France in his living room. He rides the shortest time every day. He rides on a stationary bike in his living room, sometimes leaving blueberry pie. And he loses about a pound for every 10 miles.
10 hours.
10 hours.
10 miles.
Rides.
Oh, if only.
If only. And how far do you ride? You go about 10 miles an hour?
9 or 10 miles an hour, depending on the day.
So in 10 hours you ride,
A few miles.
That crackerjack math. Congratulations. Happy 37th anniversary to all of us from the man landing on the moon, Neil Armstrong. Neil, Buzz, and Mike landing on the moon. Well, Mike didn't land around on the moon. He rode around the moon in the creepiest job ever.
Yeah.
Man, the creepiest job. And they would take him off. Did you know this? I watch a lot of that moon stuff, you know, and those documentaries.
Uh-huh.
And they would take Mike Collins off to special training. While Neil and Buzz were working on all the moon stuff, they'd take him off with other people. And what they were training him was how to run all the controls and do all the jobs to take the ship back to Earth by himself if something went wrong. And I always pictured him coming back and going, okay, we worked on taking pictures on the moon and getting our footprints there and putting up the flag with the little line there and putting the plaque down. What'd you work on, Mike? Oh, nothing. We just talked a little bit. I mean, there's so much stuff to do. It's so exciting to be on the moon. There's all this stuff we can do. We're going to take pictures. We're going to do a task. We're going to run. What'd you do? You know. Stuff.
Sat in your chair.
Sat in your chair, hit all your buttons, ate twice as much food as I was rationed. Wait a minute, three times as much food as I was rationed. And there was a time when Mike Collins would be on the dark side of the moon zipping around and he had no communication with anyone and he was on the far side of the moon. That is a level of lonely, you know, that is just a level of lonely that's just, it gives me chills.
Frightening.
It is frightening. I go to the Smithsonian, I see that tin can that they were riding in, and I get all creeped out. Of course, they would never put someone my size in this bag. I've got an idea. Since it's $1,000,000,000 a pound, let's put Penn in space. No, there's no way I would ever be worth that to anyone. So good luck, Mr. Gorski, on this 37th anniversary. I believe everybody knows that we've talked about the Gorski thing.
We've talked about it.
But it's the greatest thing in the world. There's an urban myth that goes around that's a fabulous joke that says that Neil Armstrong's second words on the moon were, good luck, Mr. Gorski, after he screwed up his first words, one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. But he claims it's breaking up. I still think he was got Paul McCartney-itis or something. But one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. When he first said it, and I was in grade school, and they said one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, I said, that doesn't make any sense. And my teacher yelled at me, and I was reprimanded. Turns out it does. I was right. Ha, ha, ha. But he then supposedly said, good luck, Mr. Gorski, because his neighbors were the Gorskis, and at one point he heard the wife yelling to Mrs. Gorski yelling to Mr. Gorski, yes, you will get this sex act done to you when the boy next door walks on the moon. So good luck, Mr. Gorski. Not true, but a wonderful story. Our phone number here is, and you're not going to be talking about the moon landing, because that's old news. That was almost 40 years ago. 866-570-PEN.
It's still good news.
Oh, it's great news. Yeah, and the Onion headline about walking the moon is the greatest thing in the world. We can't say a word of it. 866-570-PEN. PEN is spelled, for those of you who don't know, 7366. 866-570-PEN, 7366. PennRadio@gmail.com. PennRadio.com. I want to talk about a local story that I believe is national.
I think we should talk about yesterday's show before we get to that.
I mean, that I was higher than...
Yeah, do you remember yesterday's show?
Not much of it.
You know who was here? Trey.
Yeah. Trey Parker was here. And I went to lunch with Trey, and I love Trey Parker so much, and I wanted to have real scintillating conversation. I really just sat there at the restaurant going, is that a good sandwich? We went to the Four Seasons here in town.
Good.
Yeah, I remember that. But I was so high. You know, they gave me, in order to do this oral surgery they did on me on Tuesday, on Monkey Tuesday, They gave me, I guess it was three doses of Valium, and then this thing called Halcyon or something.
Halcyon, yeah.
Yeah, they gave me a double dose of that, so I had like five full doses. And I guess I ate a hamburger in a rather eccentric way, but I don't remember any of it. But today I am back. I'm bad. I'm wide awake, kind of. So there's probably still some residual stuff going through me. And Trey just kept going, it's nice being high, isn't it? Because we always have this argument because I won't do any drugs, and Trey has enjoyed a drug or two. He's always trying to convince me that there's a wonder in that. 866-570-PEN, 7366, penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. Let's talk about this thing in Vegas. They're now going to make it a law that you cannot feed the homeless. So they've now put the homeless right in the same category as pigeons. And the logic about this is, of course, that if you give food out, the homeless will flock. And when they flock up the whole park for everybody else. I guess that's the thinking on the whole thing. The American Civil Liberties Union, of course, is calling it blatantly unconstitutional, unenforceable. And the latest attempt by the city to hide and harass the homeless instead of constructively addressing their plight. And it's supposed to stop mobile soup kitchens from operating in parks where residents say they attract the homeless. This seems like more of that, if there's any problem that needs to be taken care of, the government has to do it. It seems like this is one of those things where people can help other people. Although they're saying the parks could be made, are being made useless, but maybe that means we should have private parks where they can let in whoever they want. But, Mayor Oscar Goodman, who might call in, there's a chance he'll call in. Always good to talk to Oscar, who has been a vocal advocate of cracking down on the homeless in city parks, dismissed questions about how marshals who patrol city parks will identify the homeless in order to enforce the ordinance, the violation of which should be a misdemeanor. He said, this is Oscar Goodman talking. Certainly. But my question here would be, what do you do about the homeless in parks? I mean, there was this thing called the Andy Warhol diet by Andy Warhol that he had, and I think the Andy A to B or something, one of the books. I read a lot of the Warhol books. And he said that the New York diet was when someone took you out to eat, order the most expensive thing on the menu that you did not like, push it around in your plate for the whole meal, have it boxed up, and give it to the homeless on the way out. That was the Andy Warhol New York City diet. 866-570-PEN, 7366. How do you deal with homeless? Isn't it okay to have soup kitchens? And is it better to just keep people out of the way and out of sight and out of mind and still suffering? Or is it okay to have them out in do you give homeless people money?
No, I don't.
Never?
Well, not on occasion.
Yeah.
I have. I gave a guy some money in San Francisco because he claimed he was Frosty the Snowman. So I was walking by him and says, can I have a dollar? And I said, no. And he said, I'm really Frosty the Snowman. And I went, oh, well, yeah, okay, then. I didn't know.
I just figure, I like to give money to charity. We give a bit here and there. And
yes, that's different than giving money to a homeless guy on the street.
It's a very different thing. But my thinking when I lived in New York City was if I gave out, a buck or two or three a day, that was under a grand a year that I was giving to people who really needed it. Now, maybe they needed it for drugs. Most likely they needed it for drugs or alcohol, but it didn't really matter. And although I did that in New York City, where I would give it to people, just boom, 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 I don't do it much as in Vegas, because Vegas, they do it with cars,
Yeah, yeah, they're standing there.
And there's something about a guy walking up to my car that it's not that I don't feel as pressured. It's that I feel more pressured or something. I just don't do it. But in New York, I carried a bunch of singles in one pocket and would just, because I was still, you shouldn't just pull out a wad of like $200 and go, let me see, get through the 20. Okay, there's the one for you. But I've often thought that maybe, a thing to do is what would be wrong with giving 5, 10, 20 bucks to somebody. Maybe they could do something, But it's more of this thing of not letting individuals set up.
And now we're not allowed to give them a sandwich, which that seems like a great idea to me.
Well,
I'm for civil disobedience on this one. I'm going to go Subway, pick up 15 sandwiches, and head to a park.
Well, yeah, 15 sandwiches. They have this weird thing. They want to do selective enforcement because they say there'll be no problem with someone bringing in a couple of hamburgers. They've said they'll cover that. That's okay. They're not going to bust them and bring in a couple hamburgers. They just don't want there to be, you know, daily feedings from a soup kitchen or something. I just don't like it. It's more of the government saying, you know, we have to take care of all the problems. Let's talk to, let's, only because I have trouble with this other name. Giovanni? Giovanni. Okay, since I can say Giovanni, let's talk to Giovanni. Hey, Giovanni, this is Penn. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Ben? Pleasure to talk to you, man. Love the BS show. Great
show. Thanks so much, man. Thank you.
I love the radio show as well. The thing is, a few years ago, I was living with a girl, and my father got into some trouble, so I was homeless for a while. Her mother took me in. When the relationship soured, I was out on the street again. I'm from Puerto Rico. I had no other relatives out here. Mm-hmm. I had some relatives in Florida that I don't speak with, so I had to go to shelters. Uh-huh. And one thing that I found in shelters, aside from being very, very dangerous, at least in both of the shelters that I slept the majority of the time, 75% at least were Vietnam vets or veterans from other wars. And a lot of them are completely insane, you know, like really, really insane. You see them chewing on their shoes, just horrible, horrible things. And it's a really scary place. Thankfully, I'm, you know, I got a job now and I have a home and everything's all right. But that was really, really scary. Like, there's other aspects of it that people don't show you. A lot of these people don't really know any better. So they have mental illnesses that weren't able, nobody took care of, because obviously, like, you see all veterans get forgotten, veterans hospitals closed. So it's not, in a way, they're kind of our product. We kind of created a lot of these people. So in a way, we kind of have to take care of them. I don't know what's your take on that.
But aren't there veteran hospitals that are for people who are veterans and are having mental problems? Doesn't that exist?
There are, but they have been closing a lot. For instance, they just closed another one. I'm in Long Island. They just closed one that was out in Nassau. And now that's on the news the other day, there was an article about people complaining about homeless near a mall. And some people were saying, well, there's probably some of the people that live in the VA hospital.
So it's another case of, you know, not in my backyard. But have you how long were you homeless for?
I was homeless, it was two occasions. One for about 3 months. The other time it was close to a year. It was about 10.5 months to 11 months.
Wow. That was, and how did, you know, since one would hope that most people who are homeless, their goal is to not be homeless, how did you get from living on the street to getting a job and getting a home and getting that all together? How did you make that change? It seems like that's a very difficult thing to do.
Well, like I said, my father had gotten himself into some trouble. While he was in jail, where they put him away for a while, he, you know, like a lot of people, turned to religion. And while I don't agree with him, it has helped him out a lot. It gave him some kind of guidance that he needed. And when he got himself back on his feet, he searched for me, and he was able to take me in, and he helped me out.
It was a family member.
It was a family member,
and
yes.
So if you think that if you hadn't had someone being able to help you, would you have been able to get yourself a job and stuff on your own, you think? Or were you?
I think I would. But it was too tempting to sometimes just go into, I did it a lot of times, go into, let's say, like a big major record store, grab a few CDs, go to one of the mom and pop stores, and then I would sell them and get some money.
I see.
And I wasn't proud of it, but it's like, man, I can't really do anything else right now. Like, sometimes I was dirty because sometimes you don't want to take a shower in a shelter because you could get raped. Sometimes the guards that look the other way. It's a horrible, horrible situation. But, yeah, thanks to a family member, I would say, would I have been able to? Now, without the help, I'm not sure. There was a 50-50 kind of thing. Sometimes I was positive. Sometimes I just gave up on hope.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks so much for telling us that.
Thank you for taking my call. Keep on with the show with the Monkey Tuesday.
Thanks so much, man. Thank you. Thanks. You know, I was, you know, for about a year, I didn't have any place to live. But that's not true. I was not homeless because my mom and dad, I was hitchhiking around, but my mom and dad would have taken me in at any time. I didn't have a job. I didn't live anywhere. That's still a hugely different thing than being from another country and having nothing. My question, though, I don't know why I'm quoting all Andy Warhol today. I guess because it's kind of a New York issue. But it seems like the most important thing is showers and clean clothes if anybody's ever going to get back into the workplace. I had a girlfriend who was a model. She was a model at the Ford agency and on the cover of stuff. And she did this thing. I don't know if the project's still going on. But she did this thing, which I thought was the stupidest thing I ever heard until I heard how much good it did. She would go with other models and help people who are homeless with styling. Help them, like, put on makeup and cut their hair and do all that so they could go in and apply for a job. And I thought it was the stupidest thing in the world. And then she would show me Polaroids and how people got jobs. So, you know, going to homeless people, maybe the next thing that Goodman will have to outlaw is giving people combs who are homeless.
I was saying you should just keep your gym membership because it's $10 a month. You could still shower.
So panhandle, shower, work out, that sort of stuff. The phone number is 866-570-PEN, 7366. The question we're dealing with is just what do you do with the homeless? There's this new law that just, I guess it went through. You know, I read the article. I've only read one article on it, so I'm certainly not an expert. But they've got a law in that says you cannot feed homeless people in the parks of Las Vegas. You cannot feed them. Of course, the libertarian side of me says that people helping people is the way to do things. It's not the government's job to either help or hurt in this situation. But they are specifically trying to stop mobile soup kitchens. Those are the words they're using. They're not trying to stop you from just giving not a lot of sandwiches, because they say the parks aren't usable for people. And I guess the question I'm kind of taking calls on is what do you do about the homeless? I mean, what is the issue that you do? If you can't feel good about volunteering for a soup kitchen and going in and setting up, and, you know, like celebrities do on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You know, what they figure they're like snakes. They can eat once a year. It'll be okay. Thanksgiving, those celebrities go out and
do it. It is a big meal.
Very big. Two pieces of pie, people. It's going to last till next year. But that's the law going into Vegas. I don't know if I can do anything to, as they say on the radio biz, make it national. I don't know if there's any other things being done there. But I loved hearing from the guy who was homeless. And, you know, he really thought there was no way out unless a family member had come in to help him. And that's not the way it should be. And I think a lot of the people are mentally ill, that a lot of the problems with the homeless came when they started cracking down on people in mental hospitals and so on. I think we'll talk about this a little more if you got a call, kind of generally about the homeless or about this law that we have here in Vegas that you can't feed the homeless in parks. 866-570-PEN, 7366. We'll be back after this. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Penn Jillette on the big free FM, sitting across from Secret Tour de France rider Michael Goudeau. Fairly sober Penn Jillette, fairly alert Penn Jillette today. But I have yet another dentist appointment this afternoon. So tomorrow it will once again be Catch as Catch Can. We're talking about the homeless. There's this weird law that's saying in Vegas that you are not allowed to feed the homeless in public parks. It has to be in a Las Vegas park. I guess you can feed the homeless in your home. But let's take off. We're just maggoty with phone calls, so let's just keep going through those and hear what other people have to say. Let's talk to Chris. Can we talk to Chris?
Sure. Okay.
Hey, Chris, what's up, man?
Hey, sir, how you doing? I worked as a homeless, escorting the homeless outreaches around in New York City as a cop.
Uh-huh.
The problem is, you know, sometimes you can enable people that are drug addicts or that are mentally ill, and you can keep them away from their help by enabling them to stay on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You have down-and-outers that need to be retrained so that they can re-enter society, and some people just have to be homeless because they can't function in a house.
Well, what you're saying is almost precisely what the mayor here, Oscar Goodman, says. He says that that there's the enabling thing going on. And I always trust people who are in the front lines. Okay, all of a sudden now, Chris, you're king of the world. What do you do about the homeless?
You give them a shelter that's safe, an intermediary place to live while they retrain,
mm-hmm.
Porch systems. You give those people that are mentally ill or drug addicted, you know, counseling.
Mm-hmm.
You get them, you know, you get them as cured as they can get from any disease they have.
And is that, have you seen that work?
Yes. You know, it'll work. There's about 10% of the people that just living in a house, paying bills, and, you know, they'd rather be homeless. I mean, you know,
uh-huh.
In some ways, that may be the breaking point for this freedom. Because the other thing is, you can't let people impinge on other people's freedoms when it's impossible, or there are bottles broken, or there's a potential for violence. Then, you know, your freedoms are being impinged.
Of course.
You know, the rest are up to freedoms. But I think, you know, as far as, did you ever see a fat homeless person in New York City? I think you probably have.
Yeah.
There's very few people starving. There's lots of resources for them to eat, to get nutrition, even to get medical aid. But,
this is a really important point. What you're saying is that the problem of the homeless is not that they need food, and feeding them is not really addressing the problem at all. Am I paraphrasing you properly?
Well, I mean, everybody needs to eat, but I mean, there is resources. The biggest resource they need is to re-enter society and get the counseling, you know, and get the help. And believe me, I'm compassionate for them. I'm a lot more liberal than most cops.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they need help, but they don't necessarily need the help that people think they need. Like, the sandwich is okay with a few bucks, but, you know, if it's going to make them drink Old English or take crack, then they don't need that money.
Yeah, well, that's well said from the front lines. I always like to hear, it's so nice once in a while to hear someone who knows what they're talking about, whatever side they're on. So thanks an awful lot, Chris. Thanks so much. You know, I'm not going to argue with a cop who was on the front lines. They just know more than any of us know. And, let's talk to Sheila, see what Sheila has to say. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to second what Chris is saying. I actually worked with the homeless outreach team in New York City as well. And the resources are there. It's informing the homeless on how to use them,
mm-hmm.
and how to use them properly. And I wanted to say that, you know, the shelters, yeah, they aren't safe in some senses, but, you know, they have different ones, like for people with mental illness, and they have ones for people who have other issues like drug addiction as well. And it's just a matter of getting to know the homeless person and what they need. And that's what the outreach teams were doing.
And what was your job?
We used to actually drive around the streets of New York. We have a 24-hour operation where we would just literally try to get to know as many people as we could and break down the barriers and just get to know them. And then from there, then you can kind of develop a trust relationship.
And then kind of pick the services you think would best fit that individual.
Exactly, yeah. We tried to evaluate them as best we could, and we kept records on anybody we met. And if they needed immediate services, such as detox, they were definitely brought straight away. And then that facility would take care of them from that point onward.
How'd you get this overdose of compassion? How'd you fall into this?
actually, I just happened to fall into it. I was doing social work anyway. And, I just heard of the job available. And I said, you know what? Everybody's talking about this situation. Let's see what it's like. And it's incredibly overwhelming. I mean, you know, for all the years that I did it, you know, we probably had maybe one or two success cases out of hundreds that we would see each day.
It's like defense lawyers, how many innocent people they actually have. How many years did you do it?
I did it for 2 years.
Did it for 2 years, and how many people were you dealing with, did you say, in those 2 years? 500?
Like on a given day you would see at least 100.
Oh, really?
Like the whole program would see 100. We might repeat the same people over and over that we would contact, mm-hmm. say hello,
but
you're talking
about interacting with thousands of people then.
Absolutely.
And you believe you have two success stories?
There could have been a few more than that. I mean, you know, and the ones that I personally encountered during my shift. But, you know, it can be done. And I also wanted to say that there are different, besides shelters, there are different things. We have things called drop-in centers,
uh-huh.
which are great. And they offer, like, private showers, things of that nature. And, you know, and also you don't want to bring this stuff to the street. Like, we used to get so angry when we saw the people feeding in the parks because, you know, the first thing the homeless do is they figure out the hustle and they know exactly what they need to get and where to get it. And they'll stay out there as long as they can. So I would suggest that you don't give anything to them. And if you want to do something about it, you know, you have to support these drop-in centers, the shelters. You have to get involved and,
now,
you know, and vote for the right people.
Were the best ones private or were the best ones government, the people that the care places?
Well, you know what? They were mostly private places that, mm-hmm. you know, had government funding of some kind.
Okay.
So it, you know,
a combination.
It's a toss-up. Yeah. definitely.
It's really fascinating to me that you read something like this rule about not feeding the homeless, and the first thing someone who's ignorant, like me, says, this is a crazy thing. How can you stop people from feeding other people? And then the two people who have called that know something about it are absolutely on the other side. That's really that's really eye-opening. And and thanks a lot. It's so hard to understand that the ways to help are more complicated. And I'm afraid that maybe giving somebody soup, or especially Thanksgiving dinner once a year, is more for the person who's doing it than for the person who's receiving it.
So, yeah, unfortunately, that's the case.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sheila. Not thanks for the call, but thanks for those 2 years you put in. Thank you. Wow. Yeah, it's nutty, because I was totally thinking this was a crazy view, and now
when I was doing street shows in San Francisco, there was a fella. We would go to a place called Just Desserts, which was a very expensive dessert place on the top floor at the I don't remember where it was, cannery, I guess. And there was a homeless guy who would be out front, begging while we would do our shows and stuff. And we'd go up there for our breaks, and he'd take a break every hour and be sitting in there having a cup of coffee and a dessert. And when we spoke with him, we said, why don't you get a job? He says, I make $30, $40 an hour doing this. And it was, wow.
There's that. Yeah. There's that. We're talking about this law that's going into effect, or has gone into effect, in Vegas, where they're stopping people from giving food to the homeless in the parks, in the public parks. 866-570-PEN, 7366. Seems like an idea that I started out dead wrong on. I was thinking this was a stupid law. How can you stop people from giving food? The two people who called... we had three people call so far. All three were more knowledgeable than me, which is not unusual. But I think they changed my mind entirely on it. Let's take another one. Let's talk to Eileen. How you doing, Eileen?
Oh, hi. How are you?
I really enjoy
your show, and I just had a statement to make. About 20 years ago, I was working in Manhattan, and a woman was begging for money or asking for money, and she had a kid about 2 or 3 years old with her, and she told me that her child was hungry, and would I give her money? And I said, no, I won't give you money, but I'd be more than happy to take you into this diner and buy you both a meal.
Uh-huh.
And she got furious, and she refused and walked away.
Yeah,
so how do you handle that?
I think her walking away already handled it.
Yeah, it was very upsetting. And you know what? I was young at the time, and I was naive, and I felt really bad, and I never forgot it, because now, 20 years later, I have 3 kids of my own, and I just don't understand how you could use your child in such a deceitful way.
It's astonishing. You hear those stories all the time, and I tend to, even though I'm skeptical about everything, even though it's friends of a friend story, I tend to believe. I don't think that's one that's just said so people won't give other people money. But it's certainly, when people have deep mental problems and people have drug problems, food isn't the answer.
Yeah, but you know what, Ken? But 20 years later, I still feel guilty that I felt like there's something I should have done.
Yeah.
I don't know what I should have done. I should have maybe hailed a cop to say, you know what, if she's that desperate, that little child needs help, because she was the saddest little kid I ever saw.
Oh, dear.
And I always felt guilty, and I never forgot it. And I just heard your topic today, and I had to call in and tell you that.
That's heartbreaking, but thanks a lot for calling and telling us. Thanks. Let's talk to Dustin real quick before the break.
Sure.
How you doing, Dustin? We got a break soon. What you got?
Hey, what's going on? My idea was reality TV show.
Yeah.
Put it out there.
Oh, that's just your panacea. The answer to every problem in the world is Middle East reality TV show.
It's a nut point of view for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all the companies would be willing to hire him.
Well,
they'd be looking good. Getting homeless people?
They did this they did bum fights, and that did not go well.
Yeah.
That kind of reality thing. A lot of people got busted on that. What's your idea for the reality show? Do you have a name?
No.
Okay, young man, you get yourself a name, then you call back.
All right.
Thanks a lot. We're going to take a break now. We're talking about the homeless. I think it's just a show that we're trying to get keep up, Pete, but it's a little bit heartbreaking. 866-570-PEN, 7366. You're on the Free FM. My name's Penn Jillette, and I'm looking at Michael Goudeau right across from me. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette sitting here with Michael Goudeau, secret Tour de France rider. Good luck, Mr. Gorski. It's the 37th anniversary of man landing on the moon, men landing on the moon, human beings landing on the moon. 866-570-PENN, 7366. I think what we're doing mostly today is changing my mind on a topic. There's a law that's going in Vegas here that you can't feed homeless people in the park. I started out thinking that was goofy, and everyone who's called, who knows a lot more than me, is saying differently. We have a very pure Gmail here that I want to read because it's so pure, and I think ultimately I agree with it, but it's just hardcore point of view. Dear Penn, the suffering of others is not a moral claim on one's life. Giving to charity is fine, but one is not, in the slightest, a bad person if one doesn't give a penny. Our lives are for us to live and enjoy, not to sacrifice to any passerby who has a problem and a hand outstretched. Sincerely, and that's from Damon in Wisconsin. That's the very clear objectivist point of view. And let's take a few more calls. Let's talk to Dave, shall we? What's up, Dave?
Hey, Pat, how's it going? How you doing, Michael?
Never been better.
I'm a sergeant in the New York City Police Department, and there's one shelter that they have in Brooklyn. I don't know if there's any others in the other parts of the city. It's pretty good, though. They have what they do for the guys that are in there. They have a job thing, and they actually go out and work during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, it's a much nicer place than most of the shelters. Nice rooms. They have a gym, a cafeteria, and they have like a plasma TV in their lounge. And they give them a little more humanity and treat them a little better and get them prepared to work on their own. That's like at the end of the program, they're pretty much ready to be on their own. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, you know, like the other guys were saying, if it's drug-addicted people or mental illness, that's not the program for them. But once you get past that, it does help a lot of people.
What kind of jobs do they get? Are there people that sign up to hire people from the shelters?
Well, yeah, they have uniforms, and they'll go do like I guess they're contracted at different places in the city to go do cleaning up or whatever, but you know, they're trained for maybe a little more substantial job once they get out of the program. They have, depending on your abilities and your aptitude, there are a lot of things that they'll have, you could be trained for, but you know, so it goes by the abilities of the individual, but there's work, immediate work for the guys in the program. Yeah.
But being a peace officer, how do you feel about the plan of not making it illegal to feed people in the park?
I guess so, like the other officer that called in, I maybe I'm a little more liberal than some of the other cops. So, you know, I don't want to see, if somebody just happens to be hungry and somebody's offering them a sandwich, I don't want to, you know, I can't see it being totally strictly enforced. I think the more immediate problem is just get them out of the park. Take them out of the park and get them sorted out into what kind of program they need to be into, you know, rather than tell people don't feed them. They're not pigeons, you know, but,
exactly.
Let's just help them get out of the park and then take it from there, you know?
Well, thanks.
That's not really the problem.
Thanks so much for calling, Dave. Thanks
okay, well, Penn, one other thing say, you know, I was raised Catholic, but given the choice between an audience with the Pope and really bad tickets to the Penn and Teller show, I'll see you at the show. All right?
Thanks a lot, Dave. Thanks so much. Call us when you're coming to Vegas. We'll be able to take care of that. Thank you, Dave. Let's go with Jack. Let's take Jack.
Uh-oh, we dumped everybody again all of a sudden.
Everybody got dumped on it?
Yeah. Our phone lines have been crazy.
Was it something you did, Goudeau?
I don't think so.
I got another interesting Gmail here that we can fill in on. Well, but if you did get dumped off the line, call right back. We didn't do it intentionally, certainly. This is from a friend of mine, Natasha, who says, "Good morning, Penn. When I was growing up, my dad would never give homeless people money. He had a more interesting scheme. He worked in a lousy neighborhood where cars were often vandalized. He made friends with a homeless man, Skeet, who lived by the grocery store where he worked. Every day, my mom packed two lunches, one for my dad and one for Skeet. My dad fed him 5 days a week, but not out of basic human decency. There was one condition. Skeet would watch my dad's car and make sure no one messed with it. Sure enough, about 6 months into their little arrangement, Skeet came running to the grocery store screaming, 'Fred, Fred, they're taking your car.' My dad ran out into the parking lot, found three guys breaking into his car, and Dad and Skeet ran off the thugs. So you should feed the homeless, but make sure they watch your car." You know, Happy Jack, before we started this show, had the exact same story. When he was working at a radio station in Chicago, he'd get a parking space first thing in the morning, at, cause he got in at 3 a.m. So it was easy to find a parking space, but the meter had to be fed at 9 a.m. And, Happy Jack would give the guy, four quarters to feed the meter while he was working and then bring him food and clothing and all sorts of stuff. So it's kind of like discovering trade again, inventing money and pay. And, we got a nice one from a, Natasha saying that her father did that. And also we can all feel safe that if somehow people forgot about the idea of working for money, our own Happy Jack would be able to reinvent it. He was able to do that on the streets of Chicago. Read another Gmail, I guess. We're waiting for the phones to straighten themselves out. I've traveled a lot all over the world, and I'm almost proud of the fact the U.S. has, hands down, the fattest homeless people in the history of mankind. I'm not saying I'm not sympathetic towards people who are legitimately in need, but the visible people panhandling out on the streets aren't necessarily the people who always deserve our charity. Love the show. Keep it up. You know, that's a good point. You know, we always talk about on Bull's Hit, you know, we talk about the Green Revolution quite a bit. And we are going to have, and I'll billboard this now, Norman Borlaug, the man who fed 1 billion people worldwide with the Green Revolution out of A&M University, Nobel Prize winner. I believe, by many definitions of great, the greatest man alive, maybe the greatest man who ever lived, Norman Borlaug. His new book is coming out soon. It's not out yet. It's called The Man Who Fed the World. It's kind of an autobiography written with somebody else. And Norman is going to be on our show. Norman's how
I
old?
I can't believe it.
How old is
93?
Yeah, Norman is 93. It's not like he does big press tours.
No,
you won't see Norman on Letterman.
Norman is 93, and right now he is in Mexico working in a field
to save people's lives.
Today, yeah. Today at 93 years old, Norman is in a field in Mexico working to raise wheat.
And we're going to have him on. He's going to come on.
So who knows how many people will die during the time we waste with him?
Yeah, we're going to have Norman on for an hour so that he gets less work done feeding people and he starves. But Norman will be on the show, and I got to say how proud I am of that. You know, I guess other shows get Paris Hilton. We get Norman Borlaug, and if that's
Trey
the
Parker.
Way we're remembered, yeah, that's the way we're remembered, that's fine with me. I'll see your Paris Hilton, and I'll raise you a Trey Parker, and we'll only bring in Norman Borlaug when we really need him to win.
That's right.
I've got another Gmail here to read on the subject. For those of you who tuned in late, we're talking about this law that started out sounding crazy to me. Well, Oscar Goodman, our mayor here in Vegas, always sounds crazy, but sometimes he's right. And they're making a law here that the ACLU is against, and usually I back the ACLU, but they're against this law against setting up mobile soup kitchens and feeding the homeless in parks, saying that it makes the parks unusable for others and doesn't really help the people, because giving them food is not the biggest problem. They need counseling, they need shelter, they need other things, much more than that.
It's possible that they're against mobile soup kitchens because have you ever tried to drive your car with a large pot of soup in it? It's not safe. I think maybe it's a safety issue.
It's a safety issue. Big pots of soup. I'm going to read another Gmail here. I'm reading this one cold. This is really exciting because this is like a Gmail that's actually more like a phone call because I haven't read it yet. Hey, Penn, I have a name for the reality show for homeless people. It is called Hobo Sapiens. They are people, too. Mitch, the content, that's all it is. I was going to read the whole contents of his mail thing. I thought it was longer than it is. Hobo Sapiens, they are people too. You know, we were going to have, Oscar Goodman wanted to call us and talk to us about this. And have you met Oscar Goodman?
I have. He's great.
Yeah, he's great. He's just a great guy.
Terrific guy.
He's a great guy and exactly the right mayor for Vegas, you know?
I think so.
And he was going to call in, but this is the cool thing about our good mayor. He will not talk on a cell phone while he's driving. He's driving his car through the desert, listening to our show. I just made that up. He's probably not listening to our show. But he's driving through the desert, and he's got a cell phone, but he won't use it to talk to us. And that's either him being a very, very conscientious driver, or it's a really nice mayor-like excuse for not talking to a whack job who happens to have a radio show in the town that he's mayor of. Ben Gillette, Mike Godot, 866-570-PEN. That's 7366. Or you can write in Gmails to penradio@gmail.com. You can go to penradio.com, where we have a lot of the old shows. It's going to be a pretty good website. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It has that glam picture of you, that weird picture where you're like smiling, looking
That's
like
one of those press things.
Yeah, it is. Do you have like makeup for that and everything?
No, I probably did, yeah.
Yeah, makeup. And do they do retouch?
No retouch, just makeup.
Because in person, there's a kind of a rodent look to you, a sneaky look to you. And that's kind of completely gone in this.
Yeah, well, that's a professional photographer. That's what you pay for.
And that was back when you were doing rock videos, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what did you do, one rock video?
I did a rock video.
For who?
Well, Barry Manilow.
That's not a rock video.
It's not.
No, it's not. Barry Manilow is not rock. The hard rock stylings of Barry Manilow. I mean, we're not going to say anything bad about Barry Manilow. He's been to my home. He's been to my home. He thinks The Aristocrats is the greatest movie ever made. Barry is A-OK with me, but not a rock video. What did you do?
I was the romantic lead.
You were the romantic lead with Barry Manilow?
Number one in West Germany.
Really?
I'm very popular in West Germany.
Oh, man.
Yeah, In Search of Love.
So
I haven't seen it in a number of years, and I hope it never shows up.
You had a romantic relationship with Barry Manilow
in West
Germany?
No.
Was that between your divorce and marriage?
Yeah, it was. I was very lonely in West Germany.
And you had sex with an airbrush. Is that what you're telling us? Something like that.
It
turned very, very, very ugly. Yes, I want to billboard that. We are in the future. Do you have a date? You talked to Diana, didn't you?
Yes.
You have a date for Norman Borlaug?
I believe September.
In September, we will have Norman Borlaug on. If you do not know anything about Norman Borlaug, the greatest thing you can do for yourself right now is go to Google.
Speaking of feeding the homeless.
And type in Norman Borlaug. And why don't you spell it?
B-O-R-L-A-U-G.
Yeah, B-O-R-L-A-U-G. Norman Borlaug, the man who fed the world.
And, you know, I cried at the foreword.
You cried
the book,
at the foreword,
which
I know.
Is pathetic. I'm reading the foreword for the book. You know, they've handed me an advance copy. It's in a binder.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a real book at all.
It's a science
and,
project.
And, you know, they're saying they tried to call Norman to wish him happy birthday, and he was working in the fields and didn't want to take the time off his birthday. They forced him to stop trying to save people's lives so they could give him a piece of cake. I was crying on the first page.
Yeah. When we did Bulls Hit, and he was kind enough to come on. He said, you know, he was really tired. He was working hard. He'd only talk like 20 minutes, and they ended up getting there, and he talked for like an hour. So if you want to hear Michael Godot and I blubbering about a true, true hero in every sense of the word, then you should make sure you listen in September. We have on Norman Borlaug. And we've had on Trey Parker, Norman Borlaug, and Kinky Friedman. And Oscar Goodman would have been on today, but...